crossing, and Fowler in the back of the net, and it's two for Australia, and Mary Fowler is on the score sheet yet again. There is just something about Mary. And Mason Mount's hat-trick. Seventh heaven.
Still up front, Alaba calling for the ball, getting it back. Benzema wants it now. Alaba tries the shot, gives Ter Stegen no chance. Absolutely brilliant from David Alaba. Welcome to the Clasico.
Shot is one way, Salah's the other. He's on an Old Trafford hat-trick here, Mo Salah. And he captures the moment. That picture will be framed and kept forever by Liverpool fans all over the world.
Yes, and a very good evening to you. Welcome to the third episode of The Global Game for the new season. Simon Hill and Alex Bross with you for the next 2 hours of football chat. Here's what we're going to be talking about tonight. On the back of yesterday's revelations, Adelaide United's Josh Cavallo joins us to tell us why he decided to go public. Young Matildas coach Leah Blaney joins us to review a simply epic two-game series between Australia and Brazil. Western Sydney Wanderers coach Carl Robinson is on the line to talk us through a huge campaign ahead for the Red and Black. Our Greatest Game series features Matt Halliday from Adelaide City, who'll talk us through the first big cup set back in 2014. And as per usual, Spencer Pryor will be talking Premier League and whether Ole can survive at Manchester United. And Paul Williams will be here to chat football in Asia. It's all to come between now and 10 o'clock on The Global Game. Great to have your company and great to have the two Alexes with me, Alex Brosk and Alex Molchanov. How are you, gents?
Very good.
Very well, Simon.
Oh, that was almost stereo. Now, before we get into start of a five, we've got a text. I love this. Hi, guys. Listen to last week's podcast and notice a glaring omission. Where is the Wanderers news segment? Or did the evil bearded one... Does he mean you or me, Broski? Work hard to stop a news segment on the biggest team in town, aka Western Sydney Wanderers. Regards from Paul from west of the Latte Line.
That's very good, Paul. Very good.
Oh, brilliant.
This is an easy answer, though, isn't it? I mean, Sydney and MacArthur, they obviously have sponsors that sponsor that segment. So if the Wanderers have someone that wants to throw some money at the show... I'll talk Wanderers all night if they want.
Absolutely. And we've got Carl Robinson on tonight as well, Paul. But yes, Wanderers, sponsors, if you're out there, show us your money. And we will happily have a Wanderers news segment. Thanks for your text, Paul. If you want to text us today, 0457 736 736, or give us a call, 1300 01 1170. Right then, let's get into it with this week's Start of a Five. Five questions in the opening 5 minutes, the burning questions of football this week. Question one, Alex Brosk. Mo Salah, the world's best, or give it a rest?
No, definitely on form and what he's doing week to week, the goals he's scoring. I think at the moment he is the world's best player.
Spoken like a true Liverpool fan. Alex Molchanov, question two. Daniel Sturridge, more marquees required or a concept that's tired?
If you'd asked me after Del Piero, Ono, Heskey, I would have said we've done our bit, but we've gone backwards since then. That's a fact of the A-League and we need them again. We need as many as we can get in. And Sturridge, I hope, is going to be fabulous for the league. So I'm looking forward to more marquees, son.
Not the panacea, but a nice little sugar hit. Question three, Alex Brosk, the Matildas. Back four for sure or back three for me?
Look, not for sure, but I tend to be more of a fan of the back four. I think, especially when you're struggling and leaking goals, I think there's just more certainty, more structure, and you're safer having four. So I think, look, in the two games against Brazil, they played quite well, but I am a fan of the back four.
Okay, back four for me as well, incidentally. I thought the Matildas look a lot more resolute defensively with a four. Question for Alex Molchanov. Biennial World Cups, give it a bash or just all about the cash?
Cash. Yes. No, definitely all about the cash, Simon. I think the expanded World Cup could be a good thing in the long run. I think it's too early now. I think that's a cash grab as well. Keep it as it is. 32 teams.
Totally agree.
Four times a year.
Although, I would say maybe for the women, a biennial World Cup would be a good thing. Anyway, question five. Last but not least, Alex Bross. The A-League's plural, an overdue collusion or an awkward confusion?
I think a little bit of both, actually. I think it is great. They're trying to get it all under one banner, but it is definitely confusing. I don't see what the problem was with having an A-League and a W-League. At the end of the day, we're still going to call it A-League Men and A-League Women.
Ooh, so, this is controversial.
You know, well, look, I get why they've done it, but was there anything wrong with the way it was?
Okay, it's an interesting viewpoint, to be honest. Yes, I totally agree. I'm a little bit sad the bell's gone, but we've lost that little bit of history, but I know why they've done it, and it does give parity to both competitions. We're going to talk to Josh Cavallo, who's had a heck of a week from Adelaide United in a few minutes' time. Before that, offer a quick break. Well, let's kick off tonight with the big story from yesterday. Josh Cavallo from Adelaide United becoming the first A-League men's player to publicly come out as being gay. The story, which for transparency's sake, I helped Josh to write on the Channel 10 website, although, of course, he released his own statement and video through Adelaide United, which was terrific, has quickly made headlines around the world. I personally think it's absolutely brilliant and long overdue. And I'm delighted to say Josh joins us now on the line from South Australia. Evening, Josh. How are you?
Good day, Simon. Good day, Brusky. I'm well, thank you. I'm very excited to be here.
Oh, that's great. I was going to ask you, how have the last 24 hours been for you? I mean, you've had Zlatan Ibrahimovic retweeting, good wishes, Antoine Griezmann, Liverpool FC, Juventus, Barcelona. You've gone from, I think, 200 Twitter followers to 25,000 in the space of 24 hours. It's just crazy.
Yeah, it's actually crazy. And Instagram is going off too. I think I just clocked 100,000 followers. So it's ridiculous what's going on in the world and how it's moving people. And that's the message I wanted to get across. You know, I just opened a message from John Terry and he was wishing me all the best. And he followed me and make sure I was okay. And the Hector Bellerin as well just messaged me. So it's fantastic to see these type of people reach out to me. And my story and message is getting across to the world, because at the end of the day, I want to make it easier for the people that are suffering in my shoes in the future.
Yeah, and I think, mate, no one better than someone like yourself. But to be fair, with your age, I mean, you're still a young kid to have the bravery to do that, mate. Did you expect this kind of reaction from the world?
No, I didn't expect this kind of reaction for the world. Look, at the end of the day, I just did this for myself because I just wanted to be happy. And it was something that was stopping me from going further in my personal life. And this is just a bonus for me. But at the end of the day, when I put my head on the pillow, I'm able to sleep stress-free. And I'm able to go to training now, free-minded. And I can't wait to get back on that pitch and start playing now.
Now, talking of training, I know that you took your coaches into your confidence before it went public, Carl Wirtz and Ross Aloisi, but you told your teammates at a slightly later date. How was their reaction? I'm sure it was positive, but what happened when you told them?
Yeah, it was definitely a moment that I'll remember for the rest of my life. You know, we were in the change rooms after training, and we came into like a huddle and a big pack, and I said to them the truth, and I said, I don't want to be living this life anymore. It's something that I've struggled with over a very long period. And when I announced that, you know, I am gay, and their reactions were priceless to me. They were so heartwarming, that the vibe in the change room just became closer and more open. And the boys wrapped their arms around me and they said, we love you just the way you are. You don't need to act like someone you're not, and we respect you for that. So they made me feel comfortable in my own skin, and that was the main thing. And I'm just kicking myself why I've been struggling for this for 6 years and why I was scared to come out. And it's scary to say, but like, that's 6 years I've lost. And I'm so grateful that at the age of 21, I've got so many years ahead of me in football that I can look forward to now.
I think that's the whole point out of this. When you look at it, I mean, just listening to your teammates' reaction, I think that is the general feel. I feel that if players were to feel comfortable in saying this and coming out, I think this isn't a surprising reaction to me. I feel like it's exactly what players would be like. And it's sad and disappointing that you felt like you couldn't, you know. And as a kid who played football from a young, from even obviously a lot younger. What is it then about the sporting culture and the football environment that made you feel like you had to hide who you are?
Yeah, look, obviously growing up, my ambitions were to be a footballer, and I dreamed of being a footballer one day, but I knew I was gay. So I looked up and I didn't see anyone in a role model figure or someone leading that pack and to say I want to follow that path. So I want to make this statement throughout my message, you know, for the people that are watching it at home or listening to this podcast, that, you know, it's okay to be different. And if there's someone suffering how I was suffering, I want to put them to ease and to show that maybe in a couple of years' time, we'll have 100 gay players in men's football, just like the women's game. So I think it's just the matter of taking that first step, and I'm more than happy and honoured to do that for the gay community.
Josh, it doesn't surprise any of us that you got a positive reaction from your teammates, from the football world. I guess the issue, or potentially the issue down the line, is when you get playing inside a stadium again, opposition fans, I'm not saying it'll be a majority, I don't think it will be, but you may get some comments that are not pleasant. Are you ready for that? Are you prepared for that? And how will you deal with it if it happens?
Look, at the end of the day, it's just like anything else. It's just like racism. It's like anything. So, look, it comes down to how I've been dealing it throughout my whole career. You know, going into stadiums and winning games, you still get hate for that. So I don't think much is going to change there. And to be honest with you, as ex-footballers, you guys should know that it's you don't focus on that in the game. You're too busy trying to score the goal and win. So it's something that did cross my mind, but I know that the world is better than that and I'm better than that.
And you've certainly shown that by what you've done this week, which has been terrific, and it has made headlines around the world. We didn't want to finish off this interview by ignoring the fact that, above all else, you're a footballer. So we want to focus a little bit on the football. You had a massive season last year, Josh, a breakthrough campaign, really. You won awards at the club awards nights. What about this season coming up for the Reds? You're through to the quarterfinals again of the FFA Cup, looking to make it the first team to win it three in a row. Isaias is back. George Blackwood has returned, but you've lost a few as well. Jordan Elsie's gone. Hal Santoro, Tommy Urich, Ryan Strain. How do you assess the Reds squad and your prospects for this season?
Look, I'm really excited for the boys. We've got a very strong team lined up, and the potential we have with our youngsters and mixed with our old boys, it's fantastic. And I think we've got the right chemistry and balance throughout the team. So I'm not expecting anything less than a championship this year and to go all the way again for back-to-back in the FFA Cup. I think we're more than capable of it.
Absolutely. And, yeah, you talk about the FFA Cup. You guys, hopefully, from your side, looking to become the first team to make it three in a row, which would be incredible. Is he back? Is he training already?
Yeah, he's been back. He's been training.
He's playing.
He's played in the cup. Oh, well, okay.
Yeah, he's been playing for quite some time now. But
what have you noticed about him? I don't know if you would have been with him when he was before he left, obviously. But tell us about his influence having come back.
Yeah, look, you can really notice it on the pitch. Like when I'm making forward runs, and he doesn't even need to think twice. He just puts his head down and kicks the ball, and it ends up straight at my feet. So having someone of that caliber playing with, it's honestly an honour. And honestly, in my eyes, this guy's a magician. So I'm really looking forward to playing next to him in the season.
Well, Josh, we're looking forward to watching you play as well. And again, brilliantly done on all your work this week. You're representing an awful lot of people. And I think it's an issue in football that has been taboo for way too long. So well done to you. For getting it out in the open, not just for yourself, but for a lot of other people as well. And a personal thank you for asking me to write your story as well for Channel 10. So thanks, mate. You're
well
a good
done,
man.
Josh.
No worries. Thank you so much for help covering me. You're a pleasure to work with.
Pleasure, mate. No problem. That is Josh Cavallo. What a week he has had. Incredible. And when you think, you know, the one question we didn't ask him was who he supported as a boy, maybe. You know, maybe it was Liverpool or Juventus. Josh, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm there.
Did you have a team as a kid? An overseas
Definitely.
Team?
I'm supporting Liverpool.
Oh, there you go.
They retweeted me. I was buzzing. That was the first screenshot that I sent my brother.
I thought that might be the case. I wonder why you'd retweeted that one first. Brilliant stuff. Thanks, Josh. No wonder you're playing in red as
Thanks,
well.
Guys.
Good on you.
Thanks for having me.
That's Josh Cavallo. Terrific stuff. And, the A-League making headlines around the world. And we think for a very positive reason as well. Let's move on, Broski, to Talking Heads, where the two of us chew over the big issues of the day locally, aside of Josh Cavallo. The first thing I want to ask you about is this speculation that the A-Leagues are set for this long-discussed cash injection from US-based firm Silver Lake, we hear, which will reportedly score the private investors a 30% stake in the APL's competitions. Is 30% too big a slice to be handing out, or is it a necessary evil? Because let's be honest, we need that cash, don't we?
Well, that's what I was going to say. I mean, it's a lot of money when with the figures that are getting thrown around.
130 million, was it? Or, something like that?
There you go. I mean, obviously, in putting that sort of money in, they are going to want to see something in return and get something for that. But in saying that, if they're throwing that much money, you'd like to think that they see something and see potential. They're not going to throw money away. So whether it's too much or not, look, I guess we'll see. But I think it's great for the league. Someone's throwing that much money at us.
A portion of that money, I understand, will probably go to Football Australia. Should that be used to help set up a national second division? That's high on a lot of people's wish lists.
It is, and of course it should be. That's the one excuse for not having set it up already, the fact that it does cost a lot of money. So we've got a lot of money to spend now. Why not?
Absolutely. Spend. still on cash, the tweak in the rules this season regarding the cap, the designated player rule, which this season is an extra tier of high-profile player that clubs can bring in alongside the two marquees, a move which is probably quite clearly going to favour the richer clubs and perhaps prompted Ross Aloisi's complaints about the salary cap in general. What do you make of it? Just to explain it a little bit, designated players can earn between $300,000 and $600,000. Clubs going to have one each. Victory have signed Roderick Miranda under the new rule. Sydney have repatriated Adam Lafondra under the same rule. Do you think it's a good one, or are we going to drive a big gap between the haves and the have-nots?
Well, if we do, I mean, we then become like every other football league in the world, right?
Yep.
So I don't see what the issue is here. I mean, most people are talking about scrapping the cap entirely, which would do that anyway. You're going to see your richer clubs be at the top every year, and the ones that don't spend as much money, they'll be at the bottom. But that's football around the world.
Mm. A text message from Tim Coughlin. Daniel Georgievsky retires. Has there ever been an A-League footballer more destined for a post-football media career? I think you might see Daniel Georgievsky appear once or twice this coming season.
Yeah, I think so as well. I think so. He is a laugh. He's good.
Yeah. Talking of people in the media, Mark Milligan, of course, has been doing some work with us at Channel 10, but he's quit with MacArthur, one of Ante Milicic's assistants. And Adam Federici has retired rather suddenly as well, although apparently that's due to an injury. I'm not saying that it's not. The Bulls also lost 5-0 to Sydney in a friendly. Is something going on there that we don't know about?
Look, I don't know how much, but I do know that there certainly was an incident when Sydney played MacArthur. I haven't spoken to Milligan about this, but obviously having played Sydney and catching up with a few of the boys since that game. From what I heard, Millsy was disrespected in front of the boys at the end of the game by one of the club directors. And for me, if I'd been told what Millsy, if what was apparently said to Millsy was said to me, I would have walked off as well. So it's disappointing that they would treat someone like Mark Milligan, who's definitely an asset at any club, heading into a season after what he did for them last year. If this is true and they've allowed him to walk on that, it is very, very poor. And look, hopefully it doesn't head into the season for them. You don't want all this off-field stuff, starting to spill over onto the pitch. But very, very disappointing. And we might hear a bit more about it.
Away from MacArthur, Melbourne Victory secured the signing of Francesco Margiotta. We sort of alluded to this a little bit last week. Got a decent record in the Swiss Super League with Luzern, a few goals for Chievo in Serie B last year. Victory need to get this right this year, don't they? Particularly their overseas signings. Last year they brought in Rudy Gested and One or two others, Jacob Botterfield, etc., didn't really work for them. But you'd imagine with Popper at the helm, he normally gets things more right than not.
He definitely does. And even with his
and yet at Wanderers, to be fair, he didn't always get it right with strikers,
right.
Did he?
There was one, was it Cressinger?
Dino Cressinger. Yeah.
So he wasn't great. But in saying that, I do think...
Lovely fella, though. He was. Seriously, he was a nice guy.
I never met him. No, that's good. That's good. I mean, look, Rudy was disappointing, but to be fair, the whole squad was disappointing.
Yep.
So I think Popper coming in, you know, Rudy in another squad, he scores 10, 15, 20 goals, I think, given, you know, the presence that he has and the quality that he had. But in that squad, he was destined to fail for me. So I think, I think Marjotta will have a good season. And if he doesn't, look, more than enough quality to cover for that anyway.
1300 01 1170 is our number on the Global Game here on SEN, or you can text us 0457 736 736. Talking of strikers, I watched the FFA Cup tie between the Lions and Brisbane Roar at the weekend. Roar won it quite comfortably by 4-0 in the end. A hat-trick, though, for Cyrus Demme. Now, I have to say, obviously he's only a young kid and he's playing against NPL opposition with respect to the Lions. But he looked a real natural finisher because the goals that he scored, they weren't tap-ins. He had a fair bit of work to do with all three, and he really looked the goods. Maybe want to keep an eye on this coming A-League season.
That's good. They've lost a lot of players up in that front line, so hopefully he gets a bit of game time.
Melbourne City have secured Marco Tilio until 2024. I suppose the only question for Marco... is he going to get game time with McLaren, Naboot and Leckie? That's tough, but at least he can learn from the best. And I'm sure he'll have a part to play for the reigning champions. Alan Stajic has taken charge of the Philippines national women's team. And get this, they're known as the Malditas.
The Malditas.
As opposed to the Matildas.
Do you know what that means?
No, go on.
Well, I don't, but...
Is this going to be good for radio? No.
Look, I had a quick... Google.
Is it a naughty word,
Broski? It is
Broski?
A naughty-ish word,
okay.
If it's the Spanish translation that I've got. So.
are we referring to a part of the body here?
No, we're not.
Okay, interesting. Overseas. Don't text us on that. Harry Souttar reportedly has had a $20 million price tag put on his head by Stoke City. Everton still interested, apparently. Brighton, Spurs and Villa all a bit keen too. We're still giggling about that. Let's give you a MacArthur FC update for Sydney Trucks and Machinery, your one-stop shop. The Bulls have announced the signing of former Wellington Phoenix and Western United goalkeeper Philip Curto to fill the breach left by Adam Federici's sudden retirement. Curto, of course, you might remember, won the 2018-19 Goalkeeper of the Year Award during his time with the Knicks and will compete with Nick Suman for the number one position. The Bulls, meantime, went down 3-1 to the Central Coast Mariners in their latest behind-closed-doors friendly on Tuesday. Lachlan Rose was the goal scorer for the Bulls. That's your MacArthur FC update for Sydney Trucks and Machinery, your one-stop shop. Visit stmc.com.au. Your Sydney FC update for Kennards Hire makes your job easy. Call your local branch today. Jada Wyman, of course, called into the Matilda squad after an injury to Tegan Micah, although she didn't see any minutes in the game against Brazil on Tuesday. Meantime, former youth team captain Anton Milinaric has joined Brisbane Roar on a short-term loan deal. Milinaric spent last year with Dinamo Zagreb following a two-week trial before returning to Sydney during the off-season. And Sydney's second pre-season friendly against Luke Wilkes's Wollongong Wolves, meantime, has been scheduled for Albert Butler Oval. That's this Saturday at 3 p.m. Tickets are available on the club website. That's your Sydney FC update for Kennards Hire. Makes your job easy. Talk to someone who has taken the Ken Oath today. And a reminder, Western Sydney Wanderers sponsors, if you want to show us your money, we'll do a Wanderers news update every week as well. Yeah, Simon Hill and Alex Bross with you on the Global Game. 1300 01 1170 is our number, or text us 0457 736 736. We are going to switch focus and review what was a fascinating two-game series between the Matildas and Brazil in Sydney. Australia won the first game 3-1 on Saturday, and then Tuesday produced another four goals, this time equally shared. Young Matildas coach Leah Blaney was calling the action alongside Adam Peacock for SEN, and she joins us now to assess what can be learned from the mini-series. Evening to you, Leah. How are you?
Yeah, good evening, Simon, and hello, Broski. It's a pleasure to join both of you tonight.
No, it's great to have you on the show. First up, I thought the two matches were just a brilliant advert for women's football. How did you assess them?
Yeah, look, it was certainly some end-to-end stuff at different times, a very entertaining contest for fans in the stands, and what a great moment for football and sport in the whole country to have 15,000 people attend the first game and then 12,000, a fair few bums on seats at Combank Stadium, and it was a tremendous atmosphere.
Sure was. The second goal in the second game, I thought, was superb. So the sort of football that Tony Gustafsson wants the Matildas to play. We all know Sam Kerr, of course, is a natural finisher. But is it fair to say that defensively the coach is still trying to figure out what his best formation is and who the best personnel are to fill those roles?
Yeah, look, just to touch on the second goal there, obviously a world-class finish against any opponent, and potentially Steph Catley doesn't get as much credit as she deserves in that build-up, given her positioning to take a superb first touch forward and beyond and start the play very positively in the back third. So world-class goal. We've seen it from the Matildas before. It's great to see them playing that type of football in patches throughout both the games. In terms of the defensive stock, obviously with several FIFA windows moving forward and the Asian Cup, Gustafsson's got some time to blood in some more younger defenders and see really where our depth is in those positions.
And that's what he has spoken about. I mean, we've been very critical about them defensively because they have conceded a lot of goals. But his big thing is about building depth and adding, a lot of depth to the squad going into a major competition. It's the only way to win it. He has handed, debutants to 12 players since he came on. Do you feel as though he's doing that in a good way, as well as trying to find that mix of getting the girls to, build up for the major tournaments as well?
Yeah, look, it's always a balance as a head coach to build that fluency with your best 11 and then obviously blood in some of those younger players, or potentially maybe not younger due to age, just players who may not have been in the national team set up as frequently, the likes of Angie Beard and Claire Wheeler we saw get match minutes, as well as young Briley Henry, who's an extreme youngster, and Mary Fowler, both 18 years of age.
Leah, did we see enough of those players, though, in the two-game series? I mean, surely this was an opportunity to really have an in-depth look at them. Claire Wheeler got a bit more game time in the second match. Charlie Grant, a few minutes here and there. Angie Beard, a few minutes in the second game. Courtney Nevin, Briley Henry, just a couple of brief substitute appearances. Remy Simpson, just the one. Carly Rosbacken and Jamila Rankin didn't see any game time at all.
Yeah, look, it's certainly a balance when you're a head coach of bringing in those players at different points, and when you do it in a tournament or in a friendly. We saw obviously the Brazilians had a fair few younger players out there as well who got some good match minutes. So, that's something that's at the discretion of the head coach, and, fantastic to see when Briley did come on, the impact she had in the game, the energy, as well as young Charlie Grant.
Mm. What of Brazil, Leah? Marta and Debinha, of course, thrilled us, but Marta in particular, maybe that's the last time we might see her on Australian soil. Certainly got a great ovation from the fans. But they're a team that's in a little bit of transition as well, aren't they, ahead of the big tournaments?
Yeah, absolutely. As I touched on, they made several changes throughout the two games because they're in a position where Pia Sundic has been there a little while now, not a whole lot, where they're trying to blood in some younger players and get their combinations right moving forward as everybody's preparing for a World Cup, and for them, obviously, the Copa America, which is just around the corner.
And Leah, moving on to the young Matildas, what's next for the ladies there? And give us a name to look out for the next generation.
Well, I'm always mindful of any of them getting ahead of themselves. What probably is interesting is that five players in the current Matilda squad that were on the match sheet or appeared for the Matildas are actually still eligible for our young Matildas, which is Mary Fowler, Jamila Rankin, young Kyra Cootie-Cross, Courtney Nevin, and Briley Henry. So that's certainly exciting for the future.
So you're saying to Tony Gustafsson, hey, you're not having them yet. They're still mine.
No, I know my role in the system and happy to sit in the grandstand and watch those girls pull on a Matilda's jersey any day.
Yeah, I'm sure you're doing it very well, Leah. I'm only teasing you. Hey, thanks for sharing your insights with us tonight and hope to hear you call in the next Matilda's game alongside Adam. Did you enjoy that experience or would you rather be in the technical zone?
Yeah, look, a bit of both. Well, you know, I'm a coach first, so certainly would rather be in the technical zone, but it was fantastic to call the game with Adam and I look forward to future opportunities, absolutely.
And we look forward to hearing you. Thanks very much, Leah.
Thanks,
have a good
Leah.
Evening.
Thanks, guys. Bye.
That's Leah Blaney, the young Matildas coach. And Australia Broski are going to be back at CommBank Stadium, the men this is, for the Saudi Arabia game on November 11th. That's going to be
great.
Huge.
Yeah, it'd be good to have the boys back playing playing at home. Any word on the crowd?
Well, given that 75% were allowed in to watch the Matildas, you'd imagine at least a similar number.
Okay, which would be great.
Which would be terrific, wouldn't it?
The atmosphere the other night in the two games was incredible.
It sure was. Those Brazilians, wow. There's no half measures with the Brazilian supporters, but they make for such a good experience, don't they? And the Australian fans, I think, lifted as well on the back of that, which was tremendous. We heard a text from Matt in Newcastle. Regular listener to the show. How are you, Matt? Great show again, boys. Best part of the week. Oh, bless your heart. Great to see the Matildas back on home soil. The World Cup's going to be huge in 2023. Good call, Simon. Can't wait to hear you calling A-League games. Thanks very much, mate. Also, Liverpool on the weekend was world class. Yep, not going to answer you on that one. I'm a City fan. What do I care? I'd prefer them both to lose. We're off for a quick break on the other side of it. We're going to chat A-League men with the Western Sydney Wanderers head coach, Carl Robinson. Back soon. Yeah, let's talk about the upcoming A-League men's season. And safe to say there are two clubs for whom failure simply will not be tolerated this season. One is Melbourne Victory after their first ever wooden spoon. The other is Western Sydney Wanderers, who've now failed to make the finals for the last four campaigns. Let's talk now to their head coach, Carl Robinson. Evening, Carl. How are you?
Yeah, good evening, Simon. How are you?
Very good, thanks. Broski's here as well. Without wishing to sound unkind, is it probably fair to say that if that run is extended to five seasons, we probably won't be talking to you this time next season?
Well, maybe I can do what a lot of people do is join the media side of it. I live in hope.
I'm sure you'd be very good at it too, Carl, but I'm equally sure that you want to have a good season with the Wanderers. Let's talk about the on-field stuff, and in particular, your work in the transfer market. You made a whole raft of new signings. We'll go into detail on one or two of those in a moment. But first of all, I want to ask you what the latest is with Jack Rodwell. Have you agreed terms? Is he going to come on board with the Red and Black?
Well, it's a question I've got asked a lot in the last two weeks. And, I'm actually finding out information by reading it from people that are putting it out there. So, listen, there was a conversation about 3 months ago with Jack. Jack was in England at the time, and he had mentioned to me that he was coming over. I'd spoke to Jack. I kept in contact with Jack. He's coming in to see us. We're seeing him, and we'll see where it goes. It's as simple as that.
Is he a player that you know well, Carl, from your time in the UK?
I don't know him too well, but I know a lot of people who have worked with him, and I know a lot of people that speak very highly of him. Obviously, you know, with all footballers in the UK, they come with certain opinions or backgrounds from him because you're in the public domain 24 hours a day. Some are kind, some are unkind and things like that. But the people I spoke to that I value their opinion, that have worked with him, that have, you know, coached him, speak very, very highly of him.
Fair enough. I mean, we'll get on to the guys you have signed then. Rhys Williams, Tom Ahmed, Dimi Petrados and Terry Antonis. You've gone from a lot of players who have a lot of experience in the A-League. And when we spoke to you last year, one of the issues that you said you had with the squad, and it was definitely noticeable watching the boys play, was the leadership from your senior players. Bringing in guys like Rhys Williams, Tom Ahmed, what have you noticed about the experience and leadership that they brought already?
Well, exactly that, Broski. Exactly what you said. A little bit of leadership. Leadership comes in all certain forms. You know, you don't find out who your leaders are when you're winning games. you know, because it's, you know, you go with the flow. Everyone's happy, everyone's content, you ride the wave. It's when you get through, go through a little bit of adversity, a few difficulties, a few inconsistent results, bad results, you know, a defeat here or a heavy defeat there, and you find out who's willing to step up, who's able to give their opinion in the proper way. So there's different types of leaders. You know, last year I felt we had good leaders in a certain way, but the locker room is run by the players. You know, the manager has control of it, but it's, you know, it's the players' sanctuary, really. You know, I don't like spending too much time in there other than when I need to get messages across. They need to run that locker room. And, you know, it became a story last year, and it was great because, you know, I think people who know me know whatever I say publicly is said to my players as well. And I've said that before the game. I think it was Brisbane at home we played. I need my players to step up. I need more leadership from them. And obviously I said it to the guys prior to the game. And obviously it's saying that Robinson questions the leadership, which it wasn't the case. It was a headline. It was a total wrong headline for the story. I needed more players to step up because we didn't want to miss the playoffs again, which we did.
Carl, one pundit said last season, and I've called him a pundit because I genuinely cannot remember who it was. It might even have been you, Broski, but whoever it was said the Wanderer shirt was a heavy jersey to wear. Do you sense that? Because of it's such a passionate football area, because, you know, you've got everything going for you, that the jersey is heavy to wear. Is that a fair comment or not?
Well, it doesn't surprise me come from Broski. He's trying to put added pressure on
me. Actually, to be fair, I don't think it was Broski, but anyway.
No, that's fine. But let's just say it is him, okay? I'd laugh at it anyway. No, listen, I think that's fair. I think if you want to, listen, Sydney, Western Sydney, Melbourne Victory, Melbourne City, if you want to play at big clubs and you want to play for big clubs, manage big clubs, there is an expectation. And if you're scared of it or worried about it or are unable to perform during it, then get out of it. Get out of it. You know, move on. It's as simple as that. All the players that play at the smaller clubs throughout the world want to play at the bigger clubs. So when you get to play at a big club, you have to embrace it. You have to enjoy it. You have to show why you are at a big club. So is it heavy? Yeah, possibly it is. But it's a heavy jersey that if you can perform, and that's why you need good people, you need good characters, you need good leaders. And if you're able to perform then and ride that wave, you know, the sky's the limit. It really is.
Yeah, I agree. Look, I don't think the Wanderers jersey is any heavier than the clubs that you mentioned. You know, Sydney, Melbourne City, Melbourne Victory. It's part and parcel of playing at a big club. So, mate, what about Kwame Yeboah, who retired to take up modelling? Tell us a bit about that. Did you try and talk him out of it?
Yeah, do you know what? It's like there's loads of stories coming out recently with all sorts of players, and it's brilliant. But the one with Kwame, did it surprise me? No, it didn't. You know, I'd had numerous conversations with him last year, and, you know, Kwame's a good-looking boy. You know, he's not afraid to say it himself. You know, he was always modelling in the locker room. And, you know, one of the questions I had with Kwame last year is, and it's hard as a manager, you try and tap into players' minds. All right. And I try and teach them things because I'm the manager and I got to manage them. I've got kids that, my own kids that are older than players in my locker room that I have. So I've got to actually be their teacher, their coach, their leader. But I've also got to try and be their friend as well, because, you know, you've got to get the best out of people. And, you know, my one thing that I always go back to is you've got to love football. You've got to want to do it. You've got to enjoy it. And you've got to love doing what you know, you're paid to do. It's a privilege. You're paid to be a player. And if you don't love it, then I don't think you will be in the game for as long as you possibly can. And that was my one question with Kwame. A talented boy, super talented boy, had gone to Germany and come back or whatever. But, you know, I questioned it. I asked him, did you really love the game? And he liked it, but I don't think he loved it. And I think, obviously, clearly now he wanted to go in a different direction, which I totally respect. And it is his decision. And I think it's the right decision for him at this moment. That won't say he won't come back into the game. But if he does come back into it, I'm sure he will regain the love for it. And that's why it's probably the right decision for him at this right time.
Just want to ask you about two more of your new signings, Carl, if you don't mind. One of your standouts last year certainly wore the jersey quite lightly. That's the opposite of what we were discussing earlier, is goalkeeper Daniel Margush. You brought in Thomas Mejias, I think that's how you pronounce it, from overseas to compete for the jersey. And you've also signed Keijiro Ogawa from Japan. So two part question. Who's going to start as your number one? And in terms of Ogawa, do A-League clubs look enough at Asian talent, do you think?
Well, I'll answer the second one first, if you're okay with that.
Yeah.
No, I don't think they do. You know, it's a market which I followed very closely. I knew from my Major League Soccer days over there. I was always trying to snap up a bargain here or there. You know, you don't realize how tactically astute these players are playing in the J League. It's a very, very tactical league. You know, some people will say it's not as physical as maybe the A League. Certainly not as physical as Major League Soccer. But I tell you what, there's some smart players, very smart, understand the game, both with the ball, without the ball. Probably not smaller in size, in stature, but I tell you what, brain-wise, they think head and shoulders above other players and other teams. So I know the market very, very well. And when we got the opportunity to bring in Ogawa, then I didn't think twice about it. He's at a great age, and I think he offers us something different. Going back to the number one question, and it's funny because it's, you know, there's a lot of experts out there, and they're great. You know, football's about opinions, you know, rightly and wrongly, and about assessments and judgments and things. You know, I think us at Western Sydney Wanderers, I am trying to build a squad that we're able to compete with Sydney, and we're able to compete with the top teams in the league. And when I look at Sydney, I say, you know, people always talk about who plays for Sydney. They don't talk about the subs. We're at Western Sydney, people talk about who doesn't play rather than who does play. So me going into this recruitment window, I was like, right, how can I build a squad that is able to compete with the best teams in the league, but also that understands we have 14 or 15 players, which are senior players or leaders that I can go to. And then we have maybe 8 or 10 young ones. You know, we've got some talented youngsters in the group. The goalkeeping area was a situation like that. Last year, we didn't have a number one, because Daniel Lopar was on about going back home. So I made the commitment to Daniel Margouche. It was a big risk. You know, first season in the job, it was a big risk. Unproven, been at two different A-League clubs, but never been a regular, played less than 5 games. He played 26 games and he'd done incredibly well. My other experienced keeper who has been out for 2 years is obviously still not able to recover. So going into this year, the question, do you take another risk of another young keeper backing up a young keeper, or do you bring in an experienced keeper? But then if you bring in an experienced keeper, what's the narrative for the young keeper? You know, I look at how Tom Glover's progressed. I look at all these young keepers that have gone through and had to move somewhere to play, and then how have they progressed? But what are they, how, you know, it's not just about the centre forwards. You bring in 3 centre forwards for 2 places, or the right backs, you bring in 2 right backs for one place. It's the goalkeeper as well. So I had to make an assessment. I'd done that with my coach, goalkeeping coach Davide, and you know, we thought the best route for us, for the best available progression, not just of Daniel but also the club, because we've also got 2, I think, fantastic young 15-16 year old keepers, which in 12 months 18 months, you will be talking to me about why are they not playing. You know, we have to make sure that these pathways are open as well. So me bringing in Thomas was needed, because we only had 1 goalkeeper. Who gets the number one? Listen, the 2 of them fight it out, and the best keeper will win.
Absolutely.
And if you play well, you stay in the team. It's as simple as that. It's no other difference to any other position in the team.
Brilliant. The answer, Carl. And unfortunately, we are out of time because we've got to head to a break. Thanks so much for your time this evening. We wish you all the very best for the new season. You start off at Broadmeadow Magic in the FFA Cup, 10th of November, a return to Newcastle. I'm sure you're looking forward to that, Carl. But thank you for spending some time with us tonight. We really appreciate it. And good luck for the new campaign.
Thanks, Carl.
Thanks, guys. Thanks.
That is Carl Robinson. You want to get in touch with us, 0457 736 736. There you go, Paul. West of the latte line. We do talk about the Wanderers. We just give it in 10 minutes. 0457 736 736 if you want to chat to us. Also, a quick break. On the other side of it, we will talk English Premier League with Spencer Pryor. Yeah, the second hour of the show, The Global Gamers. We welcome listeners in Western Australia, and it's time to talk Premier League with former Norwich, Leicester Derby and Manchester City defender, most importantly, of course, Spencer Pryor. Evening, Treacle. How are you?
Mate, so many clubs, didn't I? I was a proper clubman, journeyman.
Jack Nicklaus. Did you kiss every single badge that you played for?
Nope.
Which ones did you leave out? Well, Cardiff, obviously. I know that.
I don't think I was a badge kisser. I might have kissed the Man City badge when I was scoring a winning goal or Grimsby.
Oh, brilliant. I was there that day, but you know that. Manchester United 0, Liverpool 5. That was the big headline for the weekend. We seem to have been talking about Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's future for some time. But those conversations have only really revved up since the weekend. Is Antonio Conte the man waiting in the wings? Is it just a matter of time, do you think?
I don't know. I'm interested in what your views are. Like, would you consider... I mean, he's got a super experience. Would you consider bringing, like, Steve Bruce in for a bit?
Are you being serious? Come on.
Look, I think he'd be brilliant alongside Harry Maguire. He might shore up the defence a little bit.
Hey! And there we are. He's here all week, like the schnitzel. Now give us an honest answer, look, go on.
He's gone. I mean, they've got some nice, easy fixtures coming up as well. The next home game's against Man City, which is going to be a right thriller.
They normally beat us, to be fair.
But the motivation now really is the teams that will be playing against Man United. I know it's you don't want to set them off on a nice little run. So they're really, really struggling. Honestly, and I mentioned Harry Maguire, he's bobbins at the moment. He's really, really struggling for confidence. At the back, £85 million, Leicester pulled the pants down, and he's struggling. You need your captain to be at the absolute pinnacle of the one that's motivating the team. And he's shot. I mean, he's been awful the last few weeks. We've talked about their imbalance in the side. The first goal that Liverpool scored was a press, but not a press. And they got completely pulled apart. And it was like a training ground goal for Liverpool. No one got within 5 yards of any player, and it's completely disorganized, and that's set by the manager, right? That's completely set by the manager, whether they're going to press or they're not. But you've got to do it all together, and they just don't look like they know what they're doing.
Bobbins is such a Mancunian word. I know exactly where you got that from. Talking of the Manchester derby, which is coming up shortly, you played in an infamous derby in 2001 against Ole Gunnar Solskjaer when Roy Keane, you might remember this, virtually ended Alfinger Haaland's career. Now, knowing you now as I do, I'm surprised you didn't actually get into that little skirmish and sort Roy Keane out.
None of us did.
Did you run
None
away?
None of us did. No, we were all there, but I'll be respectful with this, but I think there was a bit of retribution because of something Alfie had done.
Yeah.
So I can't say I understand why he did what he did, but it was retribution. And at the time, we just let it. It wasn't fiery enough to say, you know, that was out of order.
Not fiery enough. He nearly took his leg off. Sped.
I know he did, but it was retribution. It was a bit of a payback challenge, and you know. It was naughty, but I can't say I understand why he did what he did, but it had been festering for a long time, the feud between those two. Let those two sort it out, really, and it didn't really end very well.
Interesting.
Not for one of them, definitely. Span, I wanted to go back to Manchester United. I mean, everywhere we look, it's all over the news, right? It's all about Ole and Man United at the moment. I wanted to see what you think about it. Is it simply a case of just Ole not being good enough? You spoke about tactically there, how disjointed they look. Or, you know, some people have the opinion that, you know, the pressures that come with Ronaldo now being back at the club. You've got to play him. Where do you play him? How does he fit in with the guys around him? The pressure with that. Is that an issue as well? What do you think it comes down to when you analyse it?
Broski, you know, as a centre forward, if you're playing there, you've got to do the doggy work as well, and you've actually got to track back, and you've got to support you're the first line of defence. You really are. And I'm not sure. Look, he's 36 years old. I'm not sure he wants to do that side of it now. And it has changed the dynamics of the team. Everybody spoke last year about Paul Pogba and him not wanting to do the hard bit and the defending. I actually felt really, I felt for Paul Pogba on at the weekend. I mean, he comes on at 4-0 down at half time. I'm really not surprised he gets sent off, because his motivation would have, you know, his head's all over the place. He's had to sit on the bench because the gaffer thinks he's not good enough to be in the starting side that week. And then he sticks him on at 4-0 down, probably saying, go and change the game for us, son. In fact, what he actually does is his rage, his red rage, sees the mist, and he gets himself sent off and throws his team under the bus. But from Ronaldo's perspective, it has changed the team dynamics to fit him in. And it's a very, very brave manager that says, mate, I need to go a different route. So,
and the interesting thing is, the interesting thing is that if Antonio Conte ends up as the Manchester United manager, he has reportedly said exactly that, that I need to be in charge of the transfers, and we don't just go after marquee signings. They've got to fit into a team structure. It'll be fascinating 100%. To see if that eventuates. We've got to move away from Manchester United. I want to ask you, Spenner, about another one of your old clubs at Norwich City, still bottom, only 2 points. They copped 7 on the jaw at Chelsea at the weekend. This weekend, they've got second bottom Newcastle, who, of course, are now under new owners, and talking to Lucien Favre, apparently, about the manager's gig. How big is this game for the Canaries? Because, really, you fear for them, don't you, this season?
Broski thought they were going to get a result last week.
You did too, didn't you?
I forgot that, Broski.
No, I was going to ask
but, yeah, I know. And to be fair, I said Chelsea could play the kids, and they probably could have. But they are really struggling for. It looks like they, I mean, I saw something from Darren Huckabee, who's a club legend, and, you know, we accept defeats as former players of the clubs of the club. We accept that the team's going to lose, right? But a lack of effort, lack of motivation, that's something that you can never have as a player. And they really look demotivated, not just disjointed as a team, but there just seems to be a lack of effort. And I can't accuse the players of that, but that's the perception at the moment, is the effort isn't there. Now, you can't just not put effort in against Chelsea and then expect to turn it on against Newcastle in a game that you really do need to win. I'm fearful for the club, but then again, the way that they've gone and dealt in the transfer market, they've not blown the budget that then will leave them with a legacy if they go back to the Championship that's going to bankrupt the club. So,
right.
They're doing it their way. They've built a load of new infrastructure at the training ground. So they're investing, but in facilities rather than in the team, per se.
Talking of money, Derby County might have finally found some buyers. US businessman Chris Kirshner has announced his intention to buy the club. In the meantime, the Rams have appealed their 12-point deduction that sees them sitting bottom of the Championship with 3 wins and an adjusted total of 5 points. Mm-hmm. So maybe some good news for another one of your old clubs at long last. Yeah. Let's talk about the Carabao Cup. Arsenal are into the last eight. Is it fair to say this could potentially be the most important tournament of the season for Mikel Arteta? Because this is one that they could genuinely have a chance of winning, the Gunners.
You know, obviously now, I mean, we're going to see a new winner for the first time since 2016, maybe?
Yeah, I was going to say, not 19. I mean, we've not won it 20-odd years straight.
No, I think it's 2019. But 26, I think it's 2019, but no, 2016, I think, yes, was the last time we, you know, so it's blown wide open. I think West Ham are incredibly strong and playing good football and confident, but, you know, it's the first chance to win silverware. Yeah, it's valuable for Arsenal, but all the clubs will be that are still in, you know, they're super motivated to win the first piece of silverware of the season. It can keep managers' jobs. And like you said, Arteta will be... He won't be putting all his eggs in that basket because they're still really focused on the Premier League, right? So that is a big thing for them. But every manager will approach that cup super seriously because it can keep them in the jobs if they miss out on Champions League, particularly a club like Arsenal.
Well, particularly when you look at the teams that are still left in it. You mentioned West Ham. They edged out Manchester City on penalties after a goalless draw this morning in London. The first time City have been knocked out of the competition, as you rightly say. They've won the tournament the last 4 years in a row. Preston nil, Liverpool 2. So Liverpool will certainly fancy their chances of getting through to Wembley. Tottenham, of course, without a trophy since 2008. They won 1-0 at Burnley. And what about Brentford, Spenner? They beat Stoke 2-1 away from home. Could Brentford win a major trophy? How big would that be?
But you always, you know, we had that with Leicester, Simon, where we came up from the Championship, and in this first season up, we won the Cup. So it's, I mean, again, they'll still be focused on the Premier League, making sure that they'll want to make sure they get to the 40 points as quick as they can in the Premier League. But the cup competitions, you know, the teams in that have been in the Championship, come up to the Premier League, adapted. You do get these freakish things with clubs, and yeah, I mean they're going super well in the cup. They're going great in the Premier League. They could. I mean, I fancy Leicester. I'm going to put Leicester really in the mix again. Yeah. They've got a brilliant history in it. Brilliant history. The only thing that might stop him is his rotation of players. And, I mean, he rested an awful lot of players in last night for the game. So I think that could be their downfall. But Brentford, yeah, maybe they could.
Leicester, of course, edged out Brighton also on penalties after a 2-2 draw in that competition. I'm a massive fan of how Brentford play. I just think they've been such a good addition to the Premier League this season. Final one, I've got to ask you about my boys at Manchester City. I'm not sure the exit from the Carabao Cup will trouble them unduly, given that they've won it the last 4 seasons. In some ways, it might be a good thing for them to be able to focus a little bit more on the Champions League. I know they're focused on it a lot anyway, but maybe no bad thing going out of the Carabao Cup. Or is that me trying to put too sweet a hue on it?
I love your positivity around it, Simon. But the cup for Man City was an opportunity to give players valuable minutes.
That's true.
You see Raheem Sterling getting a massive amount of minutes under his belt. That tournament was something where he could rotate the players and give meaningful minutes in real competitive games to players that might not have got that before. So, I watched Pep in the team talk before the penalties. He was really, really up for it. So he'd be hugely disappointed. I was disappointed with the keeper. He looked like he had Kit Kat fingers. He got his hands through the penalties. But, you know, he should be saving one of them. He got his hand to two of them. So he should be saving one of them.
Kit Kat fingers and bobbins. It's been an absolute exemplary cross tonight, Spenner. We should let you go. Thanks for your time. We'll speak to you next week.
See you, Spenner.
Take care. See ya.
See you, Treacle. That's Spencer Pryor. Broski is a Liverpool fan. Are you going to win the Premier League this year?
I think they can. I definitely think they can. I think, just... the amount of confidence they're playing with at the moment, they seem like the team that won it a couple of years ago. So to me, I'm enjoying watching them play. Mo Salah's in incredible form. A lot of talk about Mo Salah, Mane last year, you know, and the things that seem to disrupt the squad, but this year just doesn't seem to be there. They seem to be all in sync, the only unbeaten side so far. I mean, I'd love to see them go through and become the new Invincibles. Do you reckon it's possible?
Well, it's certainly possible, and I think you're right. I think it's between Liverpool, Chelsea and Manchester City for the title. I can't see anybody else challenging. However, long way to go. We've got about 3/4 of an hour's left of our show, so we should get to this ad break, and then we'll be back with the rest of the news from around the world after that. Yeah, Simon Hill and Alex Bross through with you until 10 o'clock tonight. So we're going to wrap up the rest of the news from Planet Football over the next few minutes, and a whole host of midweek games in Europe. In Spain, Matty Ryan's Real Sociedad were the surprise leaders of La Liga, but they did throw away a 2-goal lead at Atletico Madrid on Monday, with Luis Suarez scoring twice late on to earn the defending champions a draw. That left Sociedad just a point clear of Real Madrid and Sevilla, both of whom had a game in hand. They played that last night. Mallorca drew 1-1 with Sevilla, and Real Madrid, perhaps surprisingly, were held at home to a goalless draw by Osasuna as well. Sociedad, therefore, are still theoretically top in terms of the goal difference. And if they can defeat Celta Vigo on the road later today, they will extend that advantage. Matty Ryan, meantime, Broski, still cannot dislodge Alex Ramiro in goal. He's played just the once so far this campaign. That's got to be a bit of a worry for him.
Look, it would be. I mean, obviously he went there and was hoping to get some game time. But look, he is a big club, at a big club. Alex Ramiro is a great goalkeeper. It was always going to be hard for him. But look, in saying that, not only for the Socceroos, but for him personally, I mean, we'd love to see him getting on the field.
Mm, absolutely. And of course, he did have those injury problems at the start of the campaign, which put him a little bit behind the eight ball. The other big surprise in Spain, Broski, overnight, is that Barcelona lost again, 1-0 at Rayo Vallecano, and they've sacked Ronald Koeman. They lost three away games in a row without scoring.
Yeah, look, that surprises me. I don't understand that. Look, I get they're in no way in good shape in La Liga, even in the Champions League. They're not looking all that flash there either. But in sacking a manager like Ronald Koeman at this stage of the season, given the squad that they have, I think obviously with Messi leaving, this is a year of transition for them in a way. The off-field situation that they've had as well, I don't see how this is a good thing. I don't see how someone else comes in and does any better.
Mm. It's not just a team in transition, is it? It's a club in transition. They've got big financial issues, mm-hmm. and of course Leo Messi's gone as well. Tough times if you're a Barcelona fan. Let's move over to Italy. AC Milan edging out Torino 1-0 on Tuesday, thanks to Olivier Giroud's 14th-minute strike. He was in for Zlatan Ibrahimovic, his fourth goal of the season. That opened up a three-point lead at the top of Serie A. Second place, Napoli play their catch-up game against Bologna. That's later today. Elsewhere on Wednesday, though, Empoli were beaten 2-0 at home by Inter. Cagliari were beaten 2-1 at home by Roma. These teams all in the running at the top of the table. And Atalanta won 3-1 at Sampdoria. The big result again is Juventus, another club in trouble at the moment, Broski. Losing at home a goal in stoppage time against Sassuolo.
Yeah, they are. And I mean, we talk about Messi having left Barcelona. I mean, Ronaldo leaving is just as big. And I think look, they seem like they're struggling, which is surprising. I mean, given the issues now that Man United are facing with Ronaldo in the squad, that Juventus haven't been the same this year. I mean, they're, what, seventh at the moment and well off the pace. So it's an interesting one.
Let's talk about the big clubs in Germany. It is the big two who lead the way domestically. Bayern Munich, a point clear of Borussia Dortmund after Bayern hammered Hoffenheim 4-0, and Dortmund saw off Arminia Bielefeld 3-1 on the road. This weekend, Dortmund host Cologne. Bayern have a road trip to the capital to face Union Berlin. However, in the German Cup last night, Broski, Bayern were beaten 5-0. By Borussia Mönchengladbach, which is extraordinary. It's their biggest defeat since 1978.
I remember waking up this morning and just thinking that it was a typo for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, you're right, it's been that long, but even in, it doesn't matter what they play, they don't lose that much. It's a crazy result.
Extraordinary. Good times for Jackson Irvine, meantime, in Bundesliga 2 with his club side, St. Pauli. Got his first goal for his new club as they brush aside Hansa Rostock to remain 3 points clear at the top of the league ahead of Jan Regensburg. And they also won in the cup 3-2 during the week against Dynamo Dresden as well. In France, PSG 7 points clear at the top of Ligue 1, but they did stumble on the road as they could only earn a goalless draw at Marseille at the weekend. Second place, Lens edged closer with a 4-1 win over Metz. Lens will now be cheering on their northern rivals Lille as they travel to PSG on Friday, and Lens go to Lyon on Saturday. Sunday's clash of the top two in Holland turned out to be a bit of a non-event. Ajax smashing PSV Eindhoven 5-0 to open up a four-point gap at the top. The Amsterdammers have now conceded just 2 goals in their first 10 games this year. That capped off a bad week for PSV, who announced losses of €23 million for the financial year, mainly, of course, due to the pandemic. In Scotland, meantime, Ange Postecoglou's Celtic, 5 wins in a row now, Broski, in all competitions. They defeated Hibs 3-1 overnight, and they've cut the gap on Rangers at the top to just 2 points. Rangers could only draw 2-2 with Aberdeen. It seems Andrew's starting to win people over.
Which is strange. I mean, it cracks me up, the just the stories that come out. He started the season quite well. He was playing good football. He had former players saying they wish they were playing in this team. All of a sudden, he looked like Pep Guardiola, and then a couple bad runs, and the season's over. And now, 5 wins in a row, and I guess that is Celtic, and it comes with being at a club like that. But look, it does make me laugh. And look, I hope Ange does really well. I think it's good to see, even after that little slump, if you want to call it that. The players are still buying into it. They're playing well, and look, his quality is undoubted as a coach. So good to see it, being shown in a big league.
Wouldn't that be something if they could win the Scottish Premier League title in his first season in charge? Quick text from TJ Broski. How do you cope without your usual crisp haircut during 3 months of lockdown? Did things turn ugly?
Things turned very ugly. Almost got kicked out of the house.
I can't believe that. You must have an industrial supply of hair gel and beard oil.
Yeah, but when it grows out of control, there's nothing I can do with it. I actually tried my own haircut as well, and that was a disaster.
Oh, no, that's not a good thing to do when you try to get the shears out. We're off to a quick break. On the other side of it, we will have our weekly chat with Paul Williams about football in Asia. Stay with us.
It's time for Football Asia with Paul Williams.
Yes, time for our weekly chat with Paul from the Asian Game podcast. Evening to you, Paolo. How are you?
Good, Simon. How are you going, Alex?
Very Paul. Good, very good. We've got some interesting topics this week for Football Asia. The AFC have released the coefficients and the allocations for their club competitions in 2023. It is not good news for Australia.
It's not. And we've known this for quite some time now. I mean, this has been talked about. We've talked about this on the show on a number of occasions. It's been spoken about for a number of months. What it essentially means is that from 2023, the A-League men's competition will only receive one automatic spot in the Champions League and no playoff spots. Those playoff spots instead will now qualify directly for the second-tier AFC Cup competition, and that competition is broken up into regional zones. So the A-League men's teams will compete in the ASEAN zone against teams from likes of Malaysia, Singapore, Vietnam, Cambodia, Indonesia, etc., etc. So it's going to throw up some fascinating away days when it happens, but it's not the glory of the Champions League like we're used to in the past, taking on the might of the big Chinese Super League teams when they were big, or Japanese and Korean teams as well. So it'll throw up a different challenge than what the Champions League has.
And Paul, you and I had a text exchange when these coefficients and allocations came out, and I said to you, are we the third nation with a previous winner of the Champions League to be relegated, if that's the right term, to having teams in the AFC Cup after Syria, because Al Karama won it in 2006, and Thailand with Bektero, which was a few years before. And you said sort of the modern iteration, we might be the first, which is not great, really, is it?
No. I think Al Karama made the final in 2006. I'm not sure they won. I think John Book won it that year in 2006. But they certainly made the final in 2006. So, Bektero qualified a few years before that as well. But I would imagine we're the first in the modern era. Obviously, Thailand's still got teams in the Champions League as well. Obviously, we know what's happened with Syria. So I would imagine we're the first we haven't dropped completely out, but we've certainly very, very close to it. If our performances don't improve next year to improve our rankings points, we're going to have to hope our teams get some good performances next year to get some points on the board. And then when we get into the AFC Cup, we continue to perform well. Then in a couple of years, we might earn those spots back in the Champions League.
Talking of our teams, the national team could potentially, the men's national team, that is, be playing their away game against China somewhere other than China, back in the Gulf maybe, because China's suffering a fresh COVID outbreak at the moment.
It's a home away from home, the Gulf for us at the moment. We certainly know we'd be comfortable there. Yeah, there was talk that this match against China was going to move and be played back in China. Of course, China played their opening two home fixtures, like Australia, away from home in the Gulf, firstly in Qatar and then in the UAE. There was talk that this one was going to go back to China in Suzhou, but as you said, a fresh COVID outbreak has cast doubt on that. And speaking to a friend of mine on the ground in China, he said it's all but confirmed that it won't be played in China. So I imagine now that that'll probably go back to Sharjah, where they have been based previously, just outside Dubai. Australia will be comfortable there. We know that region very, very well. We've played our home games there as well. So I don't think that will cause too many issues for Football Australia and the Socceroos staff having to navigate playing another game there.
To be fair, heading into November as well, it won't be as hot, which is a good
conditions game. Will be perfect. Yeah.
And what about the Olerus? They've started their qualifying and won their first game 3-2 against Indonesia.
They did in Dushanbe, so I'm sure they would have liked to have not conceded that second goal late on. Taking a 3-1 lead in would have been a little bit more comfortable. Mm-hmm. Into the second leg, but they take a lead in regardless. And there were some fantastic goals in that game from the Australians. So Jacob Italiano with a peach for our third goal was probably the pick of the bunch. Oh, wow. What I find interesting with these qualifiers, and it goes, I guess, a little bit to football culture, and that's a bit of a broader discussion, is that, you know, we couldn't even get a stream for these games via the official channels. There was one floating around on YouTube. I think a lot of people were watching. Vietnam are playing their qualifiers in Bishkek, and I'm told from a good friend of mine in Bishkek that Vietnam have arranged for the kickoff time to match prime time back in Vietnam. There's a small handful of journalists who've travelled over to cover the games as well, and all the advertising hoardings around the ground have been sold to Vietnamese companies as well. And I guess that shows just how seriously they take this, that they're putting so much effort into it, that they're sending journalists across to cover it. Meanwhile, we can't even get a stream of it to watch back here in Australia. So it's just a contrast in how different nations approach their Olympic program. A lot of other nations put these games on TV as well. So hopefully that's something that can be sorted out in the future.
Just before we round things out with a look at the club game in both Japan and Korea, I want to ask you about the Women's Asian Cup. The 12 teams for those finals in India at the start of next year now confirmed. The draw is going to be soon, and there's a couple of great stories among them.
The draw is tonight, actually. You might have been on air.
There you go.
You might have been on air when it happened, so I'm not too sure. So the draw has happened, and I don't know whether AFC were in playing hot balls and cold balls, but of course Australia's been drawn with the Philippines, which means they will go up against Alan Stajic.
Oh, there you go. The Matildas against the Malditas.
It had to happen, didn't it? I'm sure they employed some hot balls and cold balls to make it happen. Australia's been drawn in Group B with Thailand, the Philippines, Indonesia. And while on paper that looks pretty easy, I think what's interesting now is the crossover between those groups. So assuming Australia finishes top of Group B, which you would expect them to do, they play the runner-up of Group C. And Group C has Japan, Korea, Vietnam and Myanmar. They could end up having to play one of Japan and Korea then. In the next round, if they do finish top of the group, the path then through after the group stage through to the final becomes a little bit more tricky. Having to play the bigger teams in Asia then, but I guess that's what the tournament's all about. You've got to beat them if you want to win the title. So
absolutely. Last question. Let's go domestic football. Kevin Muscat on the brink of taking Yokohama F. Mariners into the Champions League for 2022. And conversely, in Korea, pretty bad week for Ulsan.
They almost certainly, Muskie will qualify Yokohama for the Champions League. They're pretty comfortable in second spot now. But the title charge they look like they were on a month or so ago hasn't really eventuated. Only won two of their last five. And I haven't seen all of their games, but some of the reports I'm seeing from Marinos fans suggest they're not playing particularly well at the moment. So I think it'll be a really interesting off-season for Kev as well. They're not going to win the league this season. Fans don't seem to be really warming to him and his style of play. So he's got a big off-season ahead to, I guess, mould that team in his shape and get them going for next year. And as you said, Ulsan, a bad week for them. They lost the Champions League semi-final to Pohang, their fierce rivals. They then lost to Seongnam, who are right down the bottom of the K-League, in the final match before their season sort of splits between the top half and the bottom half. And what that does now is drop them into second spot behind Jeonbuk and give Jeonbuk the ascendancy. And the thing with Ulsan is they have a habit of building up these leads and looking like they're going to win the title and then choking when it matters the most. And I don't know if this is another example of Ulsan doing an Ulsan, but it looks like it might be. They've got 5 games now to try and snatch that first place back from Jumbuk.
Absolutely brilliant, as always, Paul. We enjoy these crosses every week, and we'll do it again same time next week if we can.
Thanks, Paul.
Look forward to it. Cheers, guys.
Broski, we're out of time. What are you doing this week with your next 7 days?
I'm going to watch the boys play. Actually, Sydney FC are playing Wollongong, so I'm going to spend the day at the beach and then pop by Albert Butler and see how they go against
Wollongong. What a weekend.
Yeah.
Whilst simultaneously tending to your beard.
That'll be done on Saturday.
Right. Well, I've just moved house, so I shall be unpacking boxes, and then I will be watching Manchester City against Crystal Palace, which has been one of our bogey teams over the last few years. They've managed to beat us a couple of times at the Etihad Stadium. I hope it doesn't happen. Otherwise, that's going to be a pretty miserable week for my team after going out of the Carabao Cup to West Ham on penalties. Whatever you're doing football-wise, hope you have a great week ahead. We'll see you same time, same place next Thursday. And as ever, thanks for listening.